Matthew 19, verses 1 through 12. Now it came to pass, when Jesus had finished these sayings, that he departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him, and saying to him, Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And he answered and said to them, Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate. They said to him, Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? And he said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. His disciples said to him, If such is the case of the man with his wife, it is better not to marry. But he said to them, All cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born thus from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He who is able to accept it, let him accept it.
Well, thank you, Daniel. So it's probably one of those situations where it'd be good to actually try to line up some things in parallel passages here to kind of help understand one of these teachings, because this is from my own experience, this has been one that's hugely challenging, and we'll start to see why here shortly. First off, let's start by covering a passage that we covered just a while back in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 27. The passage that is most germane is starting in verse 31, but the context of it is good to catch in starting in 27. You've heard that it was said, Do not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for marital unfaithfulness causes her to become an adulteress. And anyone who marries the divorced woman commits adultery. Okay. Now let's go over to a passage here in Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, starting in verse 1. Jesus then left that place and went into the region of Judea and across the Jordan. Again, crowds of people came to him, and as it was his custom, he taught them. Some Pharisees came and tested him by asking, Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? What did Moses command you? He replied. They said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. It was because of your hearts were hard that Moses wrote you this law, Jesus replied. But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let man not separate. When they were in the house again, the disciples asked Jesus about this, and he answered, Anyone who divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another man, she commits adultery. And the last point that we'll just take a quick look at is over in Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. And picking this up a bit, the most germane part is verse 18 of Luke 16. But it actually is an interesting context if you start up a little bit earlier. Messiah's been talking about money, and he kind of ends the section talking about money in verse 15 by saying, "He said to them, 'You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows your hearts. What is highly valued among men is detestable in God's sight.' The law and the prophets were proclaimed until John. Since that time, the good news of the kingdom of God is being preached, and everyone is forcing his way into it. It is easier for heaven and earth to disappear than for the least stroke of a pen to drop out of the law. Anyone who divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery, and the man who marries a divorced woman commits adultery." Okay, so these are kind of parallel passages that we have in three of the Gospels there. So turning back to the passage that we're looking at in Matthew, kind of line these things up a bit. First off, the setting here. The setting is that as we've been going through this section of Matthew, he's been up teaching around in this area. He's gone up over into this area, over into the area called the Decapolis. That's kind of northeast of the Sea of Galilee here. And so he's been up in the Lebanon area north and kind of gone into this area. And he's gone back down into Judea, which of course would be in the area around usually west of the Dead Sea here, around Jerusalem and southward, and kind of around an area that's kind of similar to what is called Judea today, but a lot bigger. So he's gone back down there again, and he's the question that he gets here, and they mention this in both Matthew and Mark, is he gets this question from some Pharisees. Now, what is the question that he gets? Yeah, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Now, Matthew adds the thing in there for any and every reason. So we get that question. That's what kind of starts us off in there. So you got in Mark, you've got, is it lawful? So the question is lawful. Okay, is divorce lawful? And then you've got Matthew, which adds that part in there about for any and every reason, which has inspired some people to think that this was kind of a debate between two groups of rabbis at the time, actually two schools of thought, Shammai and Hillel. And you kind of get this this going between them. You got Shammai was considered more conservative, more what does it say and stick to what it says kind of thing, and Hillel being more of a Hillel came up with the 7 points of logic, which was basically a way that you could interpret the Torah down through time, so that any particular situation you come up with down through time, you could apply the Torah to it. And in this case, this is where you get this idea for any and every reason. Because in the Torah, as we'll look out here in just a moment, you get a very limited view of divorce as it shows up. So that's why some people think that this was a discussion in there. And it's kind of interesting because in most cases, the teachings of Messiah would be probably more along the lines of the Hillel side, the idea that the law of God is applicable down through time, but in this case it tends to be more down the lines of what Shammai was saying in that there is a very specific thing that God said where divorce is allowed. And it kind of gets to something that Susan was talking about earlier in the context of marriage and this metaphor that God uses down through the entire story of where he's getting at between himself and his people. And it's a story that goes all the way from Genesis down through Revelation, this idea of marriage. So as we line this up here between these passages, there's the question that comes, and then there's the response, and it's pretty common in them. It was like, you know, you have heard it said, it was said, have you not read what was written in Matthew? This part is, it's actually kind of in a different order, but there's this idea of, it was said this way, this is what it was written, this is what it was written in Torah about the way that the certificate of divorce, and then you also have the idea of a kind of a pre-existing context that marriage and divorce fits into, which he gets to in this idea of, you know, haven't you read that from the beginning he created them male and female? So when we look at the way these line up, the idea is that that there is this certificate of divorce. And one of the interesting things that we get in there is the Hebrew term for this. Today, the divorce is just called a get. But a get. Yeah, it's in Hebrew, it's called a get. But in the Torah, it's described as basically the order of the cutting. That's the way you would say it. It's Sefer. Yep, there we go. Sefer. Well, you know where you get. No, Sefer. Seder. Seder. Where we get Seder from. Yes. If I can just learn how to spell. Yeah, that'd be very helpful. So, Seder, and then you get this other thing in here of, the, be helpful if I add in there, the Kitterim. You know, the idea of cutting. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing in here, because the idea of divorce, just like within the idea of a contract, the idea of a contract God often talks about as being like cutting. God cuts a deal, he cuts a contract. That's where the idea of circumcision comes from, this idea of cutting into something. Cutting into rock, cutting into flesh, of establishing a contract. And we still have it today in the idea of cutting a deal. That terminology still comes down to us in the idea of a contract, a covenant. And with this idea of divorce, it's actually another cutting. You're actually cutting it off again. So you've got something that was cut before, and then you cut it off again. And we get that idea of, you hear it again and again through there about the, he'll be cut off from the people. He'll be cut off from the people. You know, if he does this, he'll be cut off from the people. This idea of a division of something that was there before and sending it away. Yo, Phil.
Would that be where they're talking about eunuchs too?
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. We'll get to that. We'll get to that, but that's a he's making more of an illustration that's picked up in a greater degree by the Apostle Paul. But the idea of a cutting is that you had something that was originally put in place and then you're cutting it off again. So I guess some questions that comes up in my mind, and I'm sure you probably already have your other questions, is the idea of how does God view marriage? You know, what is marriage in God's eyes?
Covenant.
Covenant, okay. In its basic sense, it's a covenant, a document.
Well, it just, in my opinion, that's just how I see it, because all the various terrible things that the people of Israel did, God never said, I will no longer agree to Abraham's covenant with you. He didn't divorce them. He didn't divorce the concept of divorcing. He separated it. I don't want you anymore. You're gone. He threatened it a few times, but didn't actually do it. I would say, yeah, he used divorces for him in his covenant, his deals. They can't be cut off, the ones that he writes.
Okay.
So the divorce, the agreement for marrying Abraham's descendants can't be stopped. It can't be undone. It's like a permanent thing. Hence, that's how I view the marriage as well. Because that's how it looks like to me, at least.
Mm-hmm. So when Messiah is here talking about that God created the male and female in the beginning, and that they would be cleaved together. It's kind of interesting when we talk about cutting, is the idea of cleaving. First you got the cleaving, that's what the marriage is, and you got the cutting if you want to actually break them apart. Because the whole idea of cleaving is you're supposed to be making into one unit. One unit. So we have this picture from the beginning of Genesis. And then it goes down through time of this relationship often being described as a husband to a wife. So as you were talking about, Daniel, with the idea of that down through time, God has been agonizing over this relationship, agonizing over it, and not wanting to do that cutting off of Israel, to do the divorce. What is it that he's teaching?
Well, it's almost like as Susan pointed out, it'll always be there. He's always, no matter where you are, no matter what's going on, he's always there. In spite of how much you may at the moment in time dislike him, he's still going to be there. Much like a spouse when you need them. You may not like them at the moment for whatever reason, but they're always going to be there. I think it's part of, it's hard to even describe, when he has made a scenario and set something up such that he made his son and the sons of Israel, the sons of Abraham in particular, as one, that they're going to be one attached to one another. They're never to be broken apart again. I don't know how to put the words. It's more of just a concept to me. That it's something that it's a philosophy in how you view things. That no matter how difficult they are, or how difficult they may be, he's always there. He's always going to be there. He'll always treat you as you are to be treated. Whether or not you treat him that way or not.
Mm-hmm.
He'll always treat you the way you're supposed to be, the way he agreed to treat you. And much as a husband to treat his spouse, his wife. That no matter what happens, he must always treat you with the fact that you are part of him. And we can't cut off our arms if our arms upset. Even though he points out, better to flog off your eye if it offends you. But we don't do that. We just try to we eliminate the offense, but not necessarily the offending member. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I can't really explain it any better than that. It's just difficult to explain to me.
Yeah, because you have a relationship that will go through a lot of trials down through time, but it's not something that you end up doing away with. So when you come down in what Messiah was talking about this, it's kind of an interesting comparison between the different passages where they describe this. You know, anyone who divorces his wife except for a reason of unchastity makes her commit adultery. That's in Matthew chapter 5.
I'd like to know, why am I the adulteress when he was the one that left the
Okay,
woman?
Now wait, here's another one. here's another one. In Matthew 19, you know, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Okay, so you got Matthew chapter 5 saying that he makes her commit adultery.
Yeah.
Here in Matthew 19, it says that he is the one who's committing adultery. And then in Mark, when the disciples ask him, he says to them in verse 11 of Mark 10, whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. Then adds, and if she herself divorces her husband and marries another man, she is committing adultery. Now this is quite astounding, because when we go back and we look here in Torah, it goes one direction. You know, and that's the only thing that's actually mentioned. It says, you know, if a man has found any sort of uncleanness or whatever in the wife, he gives her the bill of divorce, the get, and away she goes. However, here in Mark, it's saying that if she does that, that is actually, that's not, you know, even in Jewish law today, that is just not heard of. And in fact, that's a major problem in Israel, because you have these turkeys who will make life a living hell for the wife, because they'll take off, they'll treat her badly and this and that and the other, and she will beg at the feet of the rabbinical councils to get, you know, for this to happen. But, you know, if he doesn't want to give it, then, you know, there's pretty much down through time the rabbis came up with a solution to that, and they said, well, okay, if you have a situation where he's recalcitrant and just will not dissolve it, issue the get or whatever, then the rabbis pretty much step in and have to annul it. And it even comes into the situation where the guy decides to play games and will issue her a divorce decree, so she goes off and gets married. And then in the midst of when she doesn't realize that that's happened, he goes and cancels the divorce decree, making her an adulterer. So it's like, no, the rabbi said, you know, you're completely violating what God is even saying in there. So in a sense, we get back to the whole idea of what God was intending to begin with. And this is a relationship that is, you know, it goes through hard times, it goes through good times, it's something that continues on, and it's always looking out for the good of the other people. Once you start getting into a violation of that, then you start encountering problems of even the validity of the contract. Because since it is a contract, even we today will acknowledge the idea that if there is a breach of contract, the offended party can, you know, seek grievances and even cancel the thing, because it's been breached. That's the whole idea of a breach, is that there's something been broken open in the contract. Yeah, Bill, you had a question?
Yeah.
Like in those marriages back then, sometimes these bride and groom, they didn't even see each other that much.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
Today, like, if you're seeking the Father's blessing on it, and if he says, yes, this will be good for you, that's what I want for you, go for it. If not, and you go ahead and do it anyway against his, you know, for sure that he said, no, this isn't the one for you that I have for you.
Yeah. You're
going to do it anyway. How's that all play in there?
Going against the will, or as some people may get into the idea of missionary dating, or you know, marrying somebody who's not a believer anyway, or that kind of a thing.
I wouldn't get into that part. That's
just or someone just maybe a mismatch.
Well, if you're seeking him first, to ask his what he thinks, what he knows, and he says, that's the one for you that I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't like the way he or she looks or acts or does something, but you know in your heart that he has said, that's it. That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do it, and you go find somebody else that you like, which is mostly just the flesh. I don't know how to get this out.
Yeah.
Between that, this day and like, in days of old, where they didn't always see each other, that could be a pretty scary thing.
Well, especially, you know, whether you're talking about the way that it was done, you know, at the times where you're pretty much having discussions with the father, you know, regarding the daughter and such like that.
Well, I mean the Heavenly Father.
Yeah.
Not the guys.
Right. But still, still you have the idea that it's not something to be entered into lightly.
Right.
You know, and that's something that Messiah is getting at here. In that, you know, it's not something you just go in and out of very easily or quickly. Now one of the interesting things in this passage here in Deuteronomy chapter 22 is where we get this first idea of the divorce decree. And this talks about a few different situations here, starting in verse 13, that, you know, if a man takes a wife and goes into her and then turns against her, that's one of the ways it's put, and charges her with shameful deeds and publicly defames her and says, I took this woman, but when I came near her, I did not find her to be a virgin. Then it goes on to talk about, you know, the parents come out and provide the evidence that, yes, she was a virgin and such. And then if this guy is making claims and if he actually did defame her, it's kind of a situation where he mentions that that the husband has to pay the sum of 100 shekels to the father, and then he cannot divorce her for any reason whatsoever. I mean, that is the situation there. Now, when we think about that, we're like, all right. You imagine this, you have a husband who basically calls his wife, you know, an adulterer, or at best even a loose woman, and then now she is going to be married to him, cannot get out of that, no divorce possible to come out of that. Now, that seems a bit harsh, doesn't it?
Poor girl.
But you think about what that guy has done. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you think about, well, okay, so they've made this determination, the elders have made this determination that he was full of it, okay, about making this accusation. Well, you can say, well, then she could go on and find another husband. Well, the question is that, we'll think about what accusation he has made and the consequence of that. You know, that goes to the idea of defaming someone's character and just shooting your mouth off. Because, you know, even though she was acquitted, so to speak, of this accusation, you know, there's the idea that some uncleanness was found in her. The idea of maybe it wasn't that, but maybe it was something else. Idea. Maybe it was something else. So you end up sullying the reputation of the person. But still, it's the idea that you don't play games with this. Now today, you know, we often talk a lot about the benefits and disadvantages of, and huge detriments to society of divorce. But you have to look at it from the situation of entering into marriage without really a thought as to the gravity of what you're doing. Okay. You've got that part of it. And then once you're in it, not realizing the relationship that you have to have between the two people of the mutual, you know, respect back and forth. You know, so you have a situation like what we get to in Paul's writings. You know, Paul talks about this situation a lot in chapter 7. But in chapter 7, we'll look at it. This is a pretty specific situation of what he's referring to. You have to be careful of taking broad applications to it. But he goes over a whole bunch of different relationships. You know, starting out with the idea on 1 Corinthians chapter 7 about, you know, for a man not to have, it says touch, but the idea of some sort of contact, intimate contact with a woman. And each woman is to have her own husband. And then it goes on about fulfilling those duties of husband and wife. And you'll notice that each one of these little descriptions, it kind of ends with this one idea that you should remain kind of in the situation where you were called at. If you were a slave when you came to believe in Messiah, you know, don't try to break out of your slavery. Okay, if you were you're free, you know, it's kind of an absurd idea to think about. You know, don't try to enter slavery. And if you were married, don't try to get divorced. If you're divorced, don't try to rush into marriage and such. But look at down in verse 26 of this. Verse 26. I think then that it is good in view of the present distress, that is good for a man to remain as he is. And you get this idea, and it's an idea that's even expressed today, that the present distress that he was talking about was some severe persecution. And also the idea that the gospel was spreading very fast. So you have people like Paul who were going off, and you think of the Apostle Peter. You know, he was married. There is often discussions of his mother-in-law and, you know, even the healing of his mother-in-law and such like that. So he was married when he was making these trips and journeys all over the Mediterranean. So you think about that situation, but you have to wonder, well, if this was a prohibition against marriage for the unmarried to never get married, the Christian the Christian world would have been like the Shakers who died out because they never would reproduce.
It's ultimately against Torah, though, because he said, go forth and multiply.
And teach the to your children in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Because it's very important that you just don't reproduce people. You have to reproduce the image of God, you know, that's expressed with glory to the people around you. Because if you have people who don't know God and even know things that are completely against God, reproducing themselves and spreading themselves all over the place, and you have the people of God who don't reproduce, well, that's not a good recipe for the spread of God's glory throughout the world.
This is kind of a monkey wrench into the discussion. Moses, I don't know where what happened to him and his wife were separated at some point, and Moses' father-in-law came and brought his wife back to Moses. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything, you know more about that, because Moses was the one who, you know, got this bill of divorcement, you know, with the timeline of when it happened and how long he was separated from his wife. And it, I don't know if it's in there or not, but, you know, the whole idea that Moses, of all people, you know, somehow for some reason told her to go, you know, cast her out, I guess. I mean, not really knowing. Or somehow with all of his going up to the mountain.
Yeah, somewhere in the mess of that, yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, I mean, that's
the father-in-law came into the rescue and he brought her back. And Moses didn't cast her out again. It doesn't seem like they were together after that.
Well, that's a discussion in of itself, but you have to remember what happened after he left Midian and went back to Egypt for the Exodus. There was a lot of stuff involved there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a whole lot of things involved with that.
So you think that's when that happened, when he left Egypt and... That was one
who's... Well, I mean, it's possible. We just know that she was living with her father in Midian, you know, up till that particular time period to when, when Israel came, you know, back up again into the area. They were close to Midian, and so they joined up. So
when he was 40 years in the wilderness, that was when he was married to Jacobah or whatever her name was.
Zipporah.
Yeah.
That the marriage was pretty long lasting, you know, at that point. And then, what was she, a Midianite or something?
Yeah, well, she was obviously a daughter of her father who was a Midianite, so.
Yeah.
Was that one
of the people that they conquered in the end, or were they?
Well, they ended up with some of the Midianites, but not all of them. But yeah, it was just an idea of joining up with them. I mean, it could be as simple as that.
I suppose.
She was staying with her father until the Israelites came by. They actually did end up coming by there, probably at Sinai.
I thought of it as a reconciliation that her father-in-law brought her back. I mean, her father brought her back.
Well, because one of the things that you have to, always to remember when we look at the idea of divorce, and you see this in both in the Tanakh and in the apostolic writings, is the word that is often used, and you'll even see it in the Bible written this way, is send away. Divorce means send away. You know, and I'm trying to remember what what that one is there, but it's the same word. Oh yes, that one again. It's the same word we encountered last week, and the salach. You might remember last week. I don't know if you anybody recall what this salach means. Means it's a word that's used for pardon. It also means to send away. To send away. We looked at the idea of, with forgiveness, that you send away. It, like we're forgiving debt, you know, forgiving wrongs that people do against us. And in this idea, it's a bit of pardoning with the contract. So we get to the situation of this idea of whose fault is it? You know, the idea of if, you know, she decides to divorce him and he decides to divorce her, who's made an adulterer in whatever situation? So we get back to that question, because I know that in my own family, someone was told basically that when the husband decided to take off, you know, the wife went to her pastor and asked, okay, when can I get remarried? And he told her, well, if you get remarried, you'll be committing adultery. He was like, what? He's the guy who took off. You know, but if you look at what Messiah said here, you know, you're like in that situation, uh-oh, now what do you do? I mean, is Messiah teaching that, you know, some reprobate who decides to dump his wife and take off, that she is now stuck as an adulteress if she gets remarried? Any thoughts about what you remember hearing Messiah say, or any other things regarding this, that we kind of have an idea as to what the truth is in that?
When we were reading 1 Corinthians 7, you said that it's repeated, and it is repeated, and I think that that sort of pops out to me now, which didn't before, but letting each one remain with God in that state in which he was called. Not that we're called to be separated, because that was the other person's decision, or just to stay in the state that you're in and remain unmarried. I mean, married to the original one. I mean, that's what I'm getting at. You're sort of married in God's eyes. You're still married to the one that you were married to, covenant-wise.
One thing that might be helpful in that, but Paul writes about here in this 1 Corinthians chapter 7, is you see it down there. Like in verse 10, where it talks about the people to be married. He says the wife should not leave her husband, but if she does leave, she must remain unmarried. Okay, so then you say, well, okay, or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not divorce his wife, which is the same thing we just got done hearing Messiah say in several different places. Then you continue on, but to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband, and he consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise, your children are unclean, but now they are holy. But if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or the sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? So, did any of you catch in there what the whole crux of this issue is? You might see there in verse 15. What has God called us to?
Peace.
Peace. God has called us to peace. You know. Remember what we're talking about in a contract here. And God gives us the ultimate example of a husband being a husband to Israel, who will not give up, even though she takes off this way, takes off that way. We got a great example of that in living color with Hosea and describing the house of Israel. But we've got this idea that God will not waver from that, even though she takes off and is not faithful. So with the idea of peace being in there, in the context of the unbeliever in this, you might recall what the instructions were regarding, we've talked about this in previous weeks, regarding when you have someone in the congregation who is doing things that are, you know, in an immoral manner and such.
They claim to be a brother, but they're not.
They claim to be a brother, but they're not. You know. You got this idea of, do you remain yoked together with someone like that?